Welcome in to the New Orleans Saints podcast. You'll hear from players, coaches, broadcasters, and writers that cover the NFL on a daily basis. The New Orleans Saints podcast starts right now. Here's your host, Aaron Summers.
Welcome into the New Orleans Saints podcast. I'm Aaron Summers. This week we have had Charlie Smith, the new Saints kicker, on, and today we are welcoming former New Orleans Saints head athletic trainer Dean Kleinsmith. He was named the recipient of one of the awards of excellence for 2024 from the Pro Football Hall of Fame that was announced last week. Kleinsmith started with the Saints in 1969 as the assistant athletic trainer before being promoted to a head athletic trainer in 71. He spent 31 years working as the athletic trainer for the New Orleans Saints and then spent some time with the Green Bay Packers, Washington Commanders, Detroit Lions, Indiana University, the Manning Passing Academy, and the Reese's Senior Bowl afterwards. In total, he spent 41 years at the NFL level and retired from the NFL in 2015. Kleinsmith was around for 13 head coaches. He was here when Ricky Jackson, Pat Swilling, and Willie Rofe took the field, the Dome Patrol, and he started out with quarterback Archie Manning. He has a ton of awesome stories, and John DeShazer and I are really excited about sitting down with him and talking to him about some of his memories here with the Saints. Dean, thank you for joining John and I on the New Orleans Saints podcast. It's been a minute since you've been around the organization. How are you doing and how have you been?
Well, just fine. Let me start by thanking you both. This is a real honor to be invited onto the podcast with you and John, Aaron. And I'm just looking forward to sharing a few memories of the old days. Most of my memories are of the old days. I left the Saints in 2000. So it's been a few minutes since I've been out on airline drive, but I have great memories.
Yeah, you came on in 1969 as the assistant athletic trainer. At that point, how excited were you to join an NFL team and be a part of the organization?
I was beyond excited. I had just taken my last final at Indiana University. I was a graduating senior, skipped graduation, got in my car and drove from Bloomington, Indiana to Metairie, and went to work for the Saints the next morning. Happened to be at they weren't called mini camps then, but there was a mini camp at Tulane Stadium. And the next morning I started working in the NFL. My mentor was the head athletic trainer. He had been at Indiana University for my first 2 years, and then he moved on to the Saints. And then when I graduated, he brought me down, and that was Warren Ariel. He was a Hall of Fame athletic trainer for the Saints.
When you first started working here, was there anything that you just were so impressed by or so wowed at, being so young when you first started and you were the head trainer at 23?
Yes, there were things that I was wowed at. I grew up in a small town. I grew up in Minnesota, rural community. It was a big deal for me to go to Indiana University. I mean, there were more students in my first class, Sociology 101, in the auditorium than I had in my entire town. So you know, that was a big deal. But moving on forward from college to the Saints in the NFL was very exciting, daunting, and scared me, frankly. And but I'd had a little experience the previous two summers. I'd applied for a summer internship with a couple NFL teams, and got a opportunity to work for the Green Bay Packers in 1967 and 68 for those summers. They were not bad years to be with the Packers. They were the original glory years, Bart Starr and Jimmy Taylor, you know, of LSU fame. Although those guys were all on the, on the team at Green Bay in those days. So That part of it was really fun. Going back to college football after the 2 summers with the NFL team just wasn't the same. I knew that I was hoping anyway that my future would be in the NFL, and it worked out great when I got the call to come to work for the Saints in that summer of 69.
Now, Dino, 31-year run with the Saints and more years after that in the NFL as a trainer. Did you foresee such a lengthy run?
I was hoping for it, John. I was hoping it would be a lengthy run. I got fired twice in coaching changes. Although I've told people all the time that I worked with the Saints from the beginning, from 69 on. I worked for 13 different head coaches, and the 13th one is the one that decided that he needed a new face in the training room. Then, as you know, I guess I went on to the were then the Washington Redskins. I went worked for Steve Spurrier there for 2 years until he quit, and then got replaced there in a coaching change. And then my last 8 years worked for the Detroit Lions up in Detroit, and I had three head coaches up there. So I think a grand total of like 17 head coaches in the NFL was kind of my timeline.
That's pretty impressive. What kind of advances did you see in the athletic trainer profession as you progress? Because obviously everything, you know, changes and improves. And, you know, what kind of changes and improvements did you see in that profession?
Well, from the very beginning, John, I've really had to thank my team doctors over the years, particularly with the Saints, the three guys that I've had that I had there, and for the same three guys for 31 years. They would invite me into surgery with them to watch some of the players' surgeries and so on. And I learned an immense amount from them. The advances in the medical field, I think, would probably every athletic trainer would probably say that would be the biggest change, the medical advances, not only in orthopedics, but in family practice and general med as well. Those were huge. The other, if I could mention a second big change, for many years, my first 2 years for the Saints, it was just the head athletic trainer, Warren Ariel, and myself. And we took care of the squad. And that was typical in the NFL of a staff of two. But then as things progressed, and as a matter of fact, just last week, I was at the spring symposium, educational symposium of NFL trainers. And that was in Orlando at the same time as the owners meeting, the NFL owners meeting. And there's now 171 members of the Professional Football Athletic Trainer Society. Staffs now are 7 to 10 people, whereas we had two in the beginning. So I think the care of the athlete has improved immensely because these specialists that are now working for the benefit and the good of the player.
Now, Dean, I've got to ask you, and I know 31 years covers a lot of space, but are there any one or two stories from the Saints that kind of jump out for you?
Yeah. Well, there's so many, as you said, so very many. One thing was, I would guess, would just be kind of if I had to pick a dream team of players, and you always get in trouble when you try to pick out one or two or five people, because they were all terrific. I will say this, that we didn't win much in my years. You know, we didn't, you know, I know you all started winning, you know, when Coach Payton got there. But it was the relationships that was more important to me, and some of those players, and certainly the guy that it was my first round draft choice, Archie Manning, in 1971, when I became the head trainer, has would have been my, you know, premier friend and confidant and just the ultimate professional. Guys like Stan Brock then and Ricky Jackson, Sam Mills were just terrific guys that I've maintained friendships with just as long as I possibly can. Those were great guys. But as far as stories, stories, I would say training camp stories are multiple. The Saints trained in so many different places. John, you were with us in several of them. But we started in Southern California at a college called Cal Western in San Diego, right on the ocean. And that's where we picked up Tom Dempsey, as a matter of fact. He was at Palomar Junior College, and he came in for a tryout and shocked everybody. I mean, he was a near 300-pound nose tackle at Palomar Junior College, but he also kicked. Mm-hmm. And what Tom overcame with his handicap, birth defects, would be rate right at the top of the amazing things that I was able to witness. So the training camps from California to Bowling Green, Ohio, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, 11 years in Vero Beach, Florida, down at Dodger Town. Mm-hmm. Were you did you come to Vero Beach at all?
I didn't. I got lacrosse.
Yeah. Okay. Great. And just great stories. But there'd be encyclopedias full of stories of great training camps and things that happened. That was always an exciting time of the year for me, getting prepared for training camp, and then going off for sometimes 6 to 8 weeks of preparation, and then you come back for the real deal regular season.
Now, I know you mentioned relationships and you mentioned some of your favorite players, and I knew Archie had to be on that list because I saw where he was best man in your wedding. So if he's not on the list, nobody can be on the list. But was there a favorite among the coaching staff, among the head coaches? Because you went through a pretty good cycle.
Yeah, great question, John, and one that I get asked a lot. And I've never come up with a solid answer. I mean, certainly the first guy that hired me, Tom Fears, was a NFL Hall of Famer, played for the Rams, and a great guy. He hired me, gave me a lot of respect as a new young rookie assistant trainer. Going on to Dick Nolan, characters, but Bum Phillips, for crying out loud, Mike Ditka. I had Jim Mora for 10 and a half years, 10 and a half years, which were probably my toughest, hardest 10 and a half years. But I overlooked that because we won. That's when we started winning as a franchise, when Jim got there. So those guys were great. I'd say the other thing, John, would be the administrative folks from certainly Jim Finks. Boy, did I learn a lot from him. He was a great leader, a great administrator, terrific decision maker, and fair and honest. So I loved Finks. He was followed by his assistant, Jim Miller, who remains a close friend of mine, still lives in the area. Loved Jim Miller. We had a guy named Harry Humes, who was a general manager before Finks came on board. And Harry and I were great tennis adversaries. We played tennis against each other as often as we could. So they were just great people. Billy Kuharik was another great leader, a fair and honest guy that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I think people don't really, or maybe have forgotten how Jim Finks came in and really solidified the franchise and kind of got it on its footing and got it straightened out and headed in the right direction. And I guess he did it primarily by hiring Jim Moore first. So that was huge in the history of the franchise.
He did, and I'd cut out one quote of his out of the Times Picayune, and it might have been in an interview with you, but it was early on when he'd taken over as general manager of the franchise, and he'd had a conversation with Tom Benson, and he said, "Tom, coaches coach, trainers train, and owners own. Just go own." And you know, which the message there was, let me run this thing. You know, you sit back and watch, but I'll run it. And he certainly did.
Yeah, it turned out to be some of the best advice he ever gave. Where does this honor rank? Because you've been awarded a lot of things, and you've been named to a lot of, you know, halls of fame and those kinds of things. Where does this one rank?
Well, when you talk about the hallowed halls of Canton, Ohio, to anyone from the NFL, that'll give you goosebumps. I am so humbled, honored, and overwhelmed to be selected as one of the inductees for this year's Awards of Excellence. And just so there's no confusion, I'm not getting a gold jacket. You know, I'm not going to be introduced in August, you know, next to Drew and whoever else is going in, and that great group. But these are contributors. This group of Awards of Excellence has already included your Hall of Fame equipment man, Dan Simmons.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And was inaugural class 2 years ago, you know, and equipment managers, athletic trainers, video directors, public relations directors, and assistant coaches are those that are being honored at this Awards of Excellence ceremony, which is coming up in June in Canton. So I'm very excited. I'd have to say right now that it is absolutely the pinnacle for me. It's the top award. It's chosen by your peers, and I'm very excited for it. Really looking forward to the ceremony and at the end of June. Unfortunately, it's at the same time as the 75th anniversary of the National Athletic Trainers Association. Their meeting is in New Orleans, same days. The Manning Passing Academy down in Thibodaux, of which I've been the medical director there for 13 or 14 years, same days. Mm. But I'm not going to miss and then go into the Hall of Fame. So I'll be there for 2 days and then head back to Thibodaux to finish up.
Yeah, I think the other guys will understand that one. I think they can make do a couple of days without you.
Yeah, Archie's kind of suggested that I go ahead and go to Canton.
How was Archie as a best man?
Some of the stories I can't relate, but terrific. I only had two groomsmen, and it was Archie Manning and Bobby Scott. Bobby was the backup quarterback to Archie for 12 years, drafted in the same year as Archie. Archie was one, I think Bobby was 12, and they spent 12 years together as A and B quarterbacks for the Saints. So those two guys were terrific. Archie and Olivia threw a shower at their house in the Garden District, which was incredible. But he's just been a great, great friend. When he called me I guess he was probably in his mid 60s, and he called and told me, he said, "Listen, I got to tell you, I got to get my knee replaced." He said, "I'm going to see Jimmy Andrews over in Gulf Breeze, Alabama, at the Andrews Institute." And he said, I need to get my knee replaced." Oh my God. I said, "Archie, you know, as your athletic trainer for all those years, I feel partially, you know, responsible for that. You know, you getting your knee replaced." And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Look, I forgot. Were you playing left or right tackle?" Is he get beat up? He did get hot, and we would pick him up, just never complained. He just said whatever it took to get, if it was surgery, yes, then surgery, rehab, then back on the field. Or if it was non-surgical, come in to get treatment, get rehab, get back on the field. Never complained. And really, John, he deserves that number one rating that on my personal all-time list of great guys.
Yeah, I was going to say he must have been one of the better athletes in terms of his approach and how he took care of himself that you dealt with. But who kind of stood out to you as maybe somebody that was just a freak athlete, super athletic, that just seemed to rebound from everything?
Good question. And you know what? I think when you talk about freak athletes, Ricky would be my number one. Ricky Jackson, I don't think Ricky probably ever listened if we had a nutritionist to talk to the team or a sports scientist to talk to the team or a sports psychologist to talk to the team. Ricky probably just skipped out on those things.
Yeah.
He was a warrior, a gladiator. You know, the injuries, the first game that he missed was a result of an auto accident. And when he crashed his neighbor's Corvette out on the highway, and it wasn't his fault. The vehicle pulled out in front of him that had no taillights, and he smashed into it at night. You know, he played through things. He had, didn't miss games, and came in to the training room one day and really never got his ankles taped. He wore very little padding. He didn't wear any thigh pads. He was asked by one pregame, the officials were checking for protective gear, and he had no thigh pads. And he came into the training room, and he said, "Dino, I need a couple of those 3x3 gauze pads, you know, the sterile gauze pads." And I said, "Well, sure, Rick, you can have whatever you want. What are you going to use them for?" And he said, "Thigh pads. They told me that I couldn't go back on the field unless I had some protection." So he stacked about three or four thigh gauze pads together and went back out on the field. So he's one, Aaron, that would be just right at the top. But another freak athlete, and John, I don't think you were with us then, but Chuck Muncy. Running back Chuck Muncy. Such a beautiful stride. He ran like a gazelle. It had a lot of injury and personal problems over the years, but turned out to be just a great guy. And he was something. I'd say if I could fast forward on the same question, to a freak athlete. When I was at Detroit, we had a wide receiver named Calvin Johnson. During his tenure, he was everyone called him the best wide receiver in the NFL for a few of those years. And he really was, but he was a better person than he was a player. And that struck a great chord with me. He was one in a million guy. And cut his own career short, kind of like Barry Sanders did, right, at Detroit. He said, "Look, I've had enough. You know, 8 years, what, 9 years, enough. I'm stepping away." And so he did. But they still remain friends with those guys. But those are some of the freak athletes, Aaron, to answer your question.
Mm-hmm. How about some of the bigger personalities?
All right. Pardon the laughter. Personality. we had a guy that was the number one draft choice. Another number one draft choice, John, that you would probably know, running back out of the University of Pittsburgh, had the moniker of Ironhead Hayward.
Oh God, yeah, yeah.
Craig Hayward. What a personality! What an absolute a character he was. But he struggled with this was in the Jim Mora era, and Jim was very, very strict about players' weight.
Yeah.
What they weighed. And I was the weighmaster. I had to weigh every Friday morning. And they'd get fined. Back in those days, it was $50 per pound per day for every pound you were overweight. Well, I think that Mora had assigned him like a weight of 250 pounds. Now, he's a ball carrier, right? He's a running back.
Yeah.
But he came to training camp at 301. Well, that would have been a hefty fine. So the deal was that he had to show progress toward that 250. And I had to weigh him every day, not every Friday, but every day until then put that note on the head coach's desk, before the 9 o'clock meetings. So and Craig didn't want to get weighed. He would hide in the restroom. He would go out to try to hide from me. But a great character and a great guy. Played a long time in the league, and he is the father of the great defensive lineman from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes, Walter Payton Man of the Year this year.
I'm sorry?
His son is the Walter Payton Man of the Year this year.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Indeed. Yeah. He certainly was. Just a tremendous family, but a little bit different from his dad.
Yeah. 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 I can't imagine Ironhead ever hitting weight.
No, he never did. All the years he made weight.
Oh gosh.
Well, that's a lot of fun that you had, I'm sure, throughout your career with the Saints. When you look back on it, just overall your time here in New Orleans, what stands out to you the most?
Without a doubt, and I brushed on it earlier, just it's the relationships. Mm-hmm. Again, we weren't winning as frequently as you have recently, but it was just the relationships. Not only with just the players, but with the front office. And I already mentioned our doctors. I mentioned Dan Simmons and his assistant Silky in the equipment room. I mean, I spent more weekends with Dan Simmons on road trips. We had assigned seats on the airplane, and he and I were assigned together. Mm-hmm. I spent more weekends with Dan than I did with my wife. I mean, we were together for, I was with the Saints 28 years. We traveled together. So it's the relationships. And I would be remiss to not mention, and we wouldn't be having this interview if it weren't for my longtime assistant, Kevin Mangum. Kevin, I wouldn't be here. I was the president of the Pro Football Trainers Society for 6 years. And Kevin ran the show during those years. It was a lot of work to manage that society back in those days. And he was just great. Well prepared, but his personality was great. And John, you probably know Kevin pretty well. Yeah. Great personality and hard worker and everything you'd look for an assistant with loyalty and friendship and professionalism. So I really look back with great smiles there. And the other fellow that's still out there that I hired in 1977 as an intern athletic trainer for the Saints is Jay Romey.
Mm-hmm.
Jay saw the light. You know, he thought he was going to be an athletic trainer, and then he saw the light and moved on. He did our IT for the Saints when IT departments were just getting started. And then he certainly moved onward and upward to where Mr. Benson affectionately calls him the vice president of everything.
J-Rome definitely does a little bit of everything, starting with you as an athletic trainer, and he has a hand everywhere. So good hire on your part.
Yeah, Dean. Now, Dean, it's too bad that you and Kevin didn't work, didn't rub off personality wise on Dan Chief, because Chief was a stoic fellow.
Yeah. Dan was a United States Navy veteran, and worked for his dad, who was the equipment manager, who also went into the Pro Football Hall of Fame last year. But Dan worked under his dad and until he needed a new equipment manager in 1972 or 73. And Dan came down and he's still working for the Saints as an alumni liaison. And
yeah, he does the legends. He does the legends. The legends with Evans.
Yeah, absolutely. He does the legends and with Evan Myers. Yeah, another great guy. So those are great, great friendship, great people. And again, I know I get in trouble by singling out one or two or three from each department, because you will certainly forget some of the great ones. But I've had such a great time. And once the news came out about this award of excellence with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I'm getting bombarded with emails and texts from alumni players. Stan Brock was one of the first to hit me back. Archie, of course, and then Tommy Myers, and just guys from all over the country. And that kind of lightens your heart. It just really makes you feel good. But again, as I said earlier, humbled and overwhelmed by the opportunity to have this to be inducted. I'm damn thrilled.
Well, if you forgot anybody, we'll extend the apologies for you. But you can always tell them, look, I'm in the Hall of Fame, so I'm allowed.
There you go. That's awesome. But
we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us a little bit and go over some of your career highlights. Lots of fun stories there. Congratulations on the award, and thank you for all of the time that you spent here with the Saints.
Oh, Aaron, it was an honor. It really was. As I told you earlier, it was, we didn't win, and it was not about the winning then, but just about the people and all those. There's just the wonderful people in the building. A couple of years, a year ago, maybe two summers ago, our original owner came back, John Meekum Jr., an oil man out of Houston. And he was beloved by the staff. And he had he wanted to have a reunion at Joan Pistado's restaurant. So one Saturday afternoon, we went over there, and all, Greg and Rusty from PR and Sylvia from PR and the secretaries, Ellen and Fran, all came, and Dan and I, and just all those department heads came, and we had a ball. It was like a true family reunion or a class reunion, after 25 years. It was really fun. But I can't thank you two enough for the invitation to join you today. And you've made it very, very easy, but very enjoyable for me. So I thank you both.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thank you, Dean.
Gotcha. Have a great weekend.
Really appreciate Dean. Lots of fun stuff there in that one. And if you miss the interview Monday with Saints kicker Charlie Smith, you got to tune in at least to hear his accent. He is from Ireland. Very cool story on how he got here and got his opportunity in the NFL and landed here with the Saints. You can always find everything we do on NewOrleansSaints.com or check out at Saints on X. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode.
Thanks for listening to the New Orleans Saints podcast. Join us three times per week on NewOrleansSaints.com, the Saints mobile app, or you can download the podcast on iTunes. We'll see you next time, right here on the New Orleans Saints podcast.